Welcome to Goddardry. I'm your host, Nani Sellis. God is within you now, and God has always been within you. Goddardry is dedicated to helping you find that God within you and living from that space, not just for the time that you listen to this show or the time that maybe you go on a beautiful hike in the mountains or play with your children or grandchildren, but every moment of every day. The intention of Goddardry is to bring God back to you and you back to God and help you remember who you really are, help you remember the power within you and how you can pass the inspiration of love and kindness and harmony onto others as well. And this is how we make a difference in the world. This is how we transform the world. This is how we fulfill our purpose and our mission. Tonight we're going to be talking about how to create heaven on earth. Think about that. Creating heaven on earth in your life, in every moment of your life. What does it mean to live in God's kingdom? Does that mean that there's some place to go? Does it happen after death? Or does it happen here in this world, in this life? The truth is, you all are already in God's kingdom. You are already in heaven. And you are a piece of that heaven. You are a piece of that kingdom that is God's. And what is required is simply waking up and remembering that truth. Waking up and looking around you. Waking up and taking a deep breath and looking within you. Waking up and remembering that what you see is what you create, and what you create is what you see. And taking that power back from everyone and everything else that seems to be creating anything else other than heaven. That day is now. That time is now. And guess what? You are ready. How do I know you're ready? Well, you're listening to this, aren't you? And that's all I need to know. What we will create together is going to be absolutely amazing. This is the most divine time to live on this planet, and we truly are creating heaven on earth. We truly are waking up to the daily living in the kingdom of God. So fasten your seatbelts. We're going to have an amazing show tonight, and soon I will bring on one of my favorite guests. He's been on Chai with Nanise and LA Talk Radio, and this is Michael Dowd, and you are going to absolutely love him, because I sure do. But before we do that, let's do a short meditation, and if you are somewhere where you're safe and not driving, please close your eyes and sit back and open your palms facing upward and just take a deep breath and let out a good sigh and another one after that. Deep breath in, and another one still. Yes, I bet you feel better already. Just the act of breathing connects us to the divine and connects us to who we really are. And as you continue to breathe deeply, I'd like you to imagine your favorite place on earth. Where is that? For me, that is in Lake Powell, in Utah, southern Utah. And let me tell you a little bit about it, just to spark your memory of your favorite place on earth. And if you don't have one, you can borrow mine. I sure don't mind. Lake Powell is the Grand Canyon filled with emerald green water. And in the summer, it is 80 degrees warm. The walls of this canyon are of the most beautiful red rock you could imagine and seem to go on forever. Lake Powell has more waterfront than all of the East Coast combined. It is truly a magical and splendid place. When you dive into the water and just let your body relax back on the water, suddenly you feel as if you are swept away. You feel as if you haven't a worry in the world. Imagine now just relaxing on that emerald green water. In that emerald green water, just relaxing, letting your whole body go, letting your whole body go and just relax. Or maybe you're in a beautiful forest or a beach somewhere. Maybe you're in the mountains. Maybe you're in a valley or the toppest peak on top of the most beautiful rock. Maybe you're in California, or Florida, or Brazil, or Peru. Maybe you're at a sacred site like Machu Picchu or the Great Pyramids. Whoever you are, just imagine that you can breathe in the air. Just imagine that your body can feel the energy of this sacred place, wherever it might be. Your skin can feel the air. And every breath you take, you're actually breathing in a peace. Every breath you take, you're actually sharing energy with that which you love. And that which you love is sharing energy with you. Imagine that you can walk around and see the beauty. Imagine that you can smell the flowers, if there's flowers, or the trees, or the ocean, or whatever there might be. Imagine that this truly is heaven on earth. Imagine that now, that this is God's kingdom that you have found. And bring that feeling into your body even more. What does it feel like to be in heaven on earth? What does it feel like to be in God's kingdom on earth? What does that feel like from the tips of your toes to the top of your head? What does that feel like against your skin? What does that feel like in your heart? What does that feel like inside every cell in your body? Now take that delicious feeling and imagine that that feeling emanates into the room that you are now. Wherever your physical body is now, take that feeling of what it's like to be in heaven on earth and extend that to your current environment and situation. And open your eyes and look around you. And notice how everything looks different. Notice how everything is shinier, more sparkly, warmer, more peaceful, more harmonic. And there is love dancing all around you. Notice that where you are right now is also heaven on earth. And as you notice that your environment and those people around you are all a part of heaven on earth, notice how what you view and what you see and what you experience is now change. Notice how everything is now different. And most of all, notice how you are different. And notice that the way to get to heaven, the way to get to paradise, is right inside. And there you are. Welcome to heaven on earth. My amazing guest tonight is the Reverend Michael Dowd. He is one of the most inspiring speakers in America today. He is author of Thank God for Evolution, How the Marriage of Science and Religion Will Transform Your Life and Our World. It's been endorsed by 6 Nobel laureates and other science luminaries, including noted skeptics, and by religious leaders across the spectrum. He and his beautiful wife, Connie Burlow, an acclaimed science writer in her own right, have spoken to more than 1,000 groups since launching their ministry in 2002. At home in both liberal and conservative settings, and uniquely gifted at building bridges between religious and non-religious people, Michael shares the epic of evolution, our common creation story, in ways that uplift and expand heart, mind, and soul. His passion is showing how an evolutionary understanding of human nature can inspire and empower each of us to live with greater integrity, joy, and zest for life. Welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for sharing this time on Goddardy with me.
Oh, Nanice, it's great to be back to have this conversation with you.
I can wait. We did this amazing conversation a few weeks ago on Chai with Nanice on LA Talk Radio, and at that time I was like, Michael, I cannot wait to share Goddardy with you. And so here you are, and I'm so excited about talking about this topic with you. I know you talk a lot in your book about this, Thank God for Evolution, and it's like something that I'd like to read, and that is in chapter, I'm not sure which chapter it is, but it's The Wisdom of Life's Collective Intelligence, and one of the things that you say,
chapter 15.
15, oh, you're good. I couldn't, if you quoted something from one of my books, I couldn't tell you what chapter it was, so I'm impressed. That's good. And so what you say is, God's kingdom is the realm of divine presence and activity, where 14 billion year way of life, what the Christians call the Tao, is celebrated right here on Earth, is where, thanks to the human species, evolution is now consciously evolving in the direction of greater cooperation, interdependence, awareness, and intimacy with the whole, and at ever-increasing speed, scale, and adaptability. So basically you're saying that God's kingdom is really right here on Earth, and that it always has been, but we just haven't been maybe conscious enough, or it's taken time to evolve into it, or we're in that process of evolution. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, yeah,
words?
Yeah, I'd say all of those, but one of the reasons why many people have not experienced the kingdom of heaven here in their own life, like right now, is that we have instincts that aren't matched for the world that we today have to live in. Our instincts evolved to serve the survival and reproduction needs of our ancestors in a very different world than the world that we today have to live in. So, for example, we all have cravings for sugar, salts, and fats, because for 99% of human history, it wasn't easy to find sugar, salts, and fats, so having a craving for those things made total sense. But today, it's very easy to find foods with sugar, salts, and fats, yet we still have the cravings. So there's a mismatch. One of the things we know about testosterone is that when the higher the testosterone in men and women both, the more risk-taking occurs, and the more people, obsess about reproductive matters. They start thinking about sex more often. And when there's a rise in status, like let's say somebody gets elected into public office, or they get a significant promotion at work, or become ordained, or whatever, their testosterone levels are going to rise considerably. In fact, sometimes shoot to the roof. And so, knowing these things that make sense from an evolutionary perspective, one of the things that is a reality is that all of us, just by doing what's natural, by doing what's effortless, by doing what's instinctual, like other animals, we have left a wake, and the wake has been a wake of pain. We've harmed people, we've betrayed people, we've made promises and we didn't follow through, we broke our promises, and so on and so forth. And most of us haven't cleaned all that stuff up, or even most of it, or even any of it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we live with guilt, we live with regrets, we live with resentments and things like that, and those things keep us from experiencing the fullness of divine presence, the fullness of the kingdom of heaven in this life. And so understanding our instincts is the first thing, because what happens with this evolutionary perspective is it allows us for the very first time to deeply and heartfully appreciate our instincts. I mean, I don't know of any Christian, Muslim, or Jew that genuinely has gratitude for their so-called sinful nature, because the fall of Adam and Eve, the story of original sin, these understandings are mythic insights, they're mythic intuitions that are pointing in night language, that is poetry, to what we can now speak about in a factual, natural, evidential way. And so most of us that grew up in Jewish traditions or Christian or Islamic traditions feel guilty about the fact that we've left awake. We feel guilty about the places where we've been out of integrity. And so we've got this baggage of emotion, and having a deep time perspective, an evolutionary perspective, a sacred evolutionary perspective, allows me, for example, to appreciate my instincts. And then once I'm no longer beating myself, it's like, of course I've left awake. Then it makes it really easy to clean things up and to go to people and say, hey, listen, you know that thing I said back, 6 months ago or 2 years ago or 17 years ago or whatever? I'm really sorry. I realize that hurt you. And I realize if I could go back and do it differently, I really would. And I just want you to know that I know, what a jerk I was. Mm. And that kind of communication, that kind of self-responsible communication, heals relationships. It relieves me of guilt, because I no longer feel guilty, because I've taken responsibility and I've communicated that I'm really sorry and I've stepped into the shoes of the other. And so it makes cleaning up the past so much easier, so that I can literally feel the kingdom of heaven. I can feel it because I know, for example, tonight, I could die tonight and I have no secrets, I have no resentments, and I have no unfinished business. And that's heaven. To feel that clear and clean with life truly is heaven on earth.
That is remarkable. Yes. And so what I'm hearing you say is that guilt, regrets, resentments, pain, betrayals, broken promises, these are all things which are more or less emotional states.
Well, yes, but they're also totally natural. In other words, they're emotional states, but they're emotional states that arise out of the fact that we are social animals. We are a social species. And that's where empathy and compassion and love and generosity and care and consideration and all the pro-social emotions come from. They come from the fact that we are social animals. And we're hardwired for relationship. And so when we do something that is a violation of relationship, or that now that we live in language, because we make promises, I mean, our ancestors, you know, if hominids or you know, other species, like chimpanzees or early humans before speech, you know, if they screwed around on each other, there was no way to tell that. And so there wasn't the sense of, I mean, there might have been in the moment, a sense of guilt, you know, or whatever, but it wasn't lasting. But today we make promises, we make commitments, we make vows, we declare till death do us part, and all these kinds of things. And, you know, and also the other thing about an evolutionary perspective is we realize that we are programmed, we are hardwired to want things that make us feel good and to not want things that make us feel bad. So to avoid things that make us feel disgusting or you know, that we're distasteful or that we're, you know, unjust or whatever. But we're programmed to want it again and again and again. The problem or the challenge is today we're bombarded with activities and substances. You know, drugs, alcohol, tobacco, caffeine, video games, internet pornography, shopping, and so much more that's so easily to be addicted to because our brains are programmed to, if it's pleasurable, if it's a pleasurable activity or a pleasurable substance, want it again, want it again. Mm-hmm. And
well, the other part of that is that eventually any of those things, at some point, they become painful.
Well, exactly. And sometimes the pain drives us into recovery or into dealing with it. But again, having an evolutionary perspective allows you to honor your instincts by not necessarily succumbing to them. But I mean, for example, I find it infinitely easier to stay in integrity because I have an evolutionary appreciation of my instincts. It's a hugely, I mean, that's, in my opinion, it's the practical benefits of an evolutionary understanding of our brains and our evolutionary understanding of our instincts that's perhaps the greatest benefit of all of a sacred deep time perspective.
Yeah. So in other words, understanding that it's instinctual takes the power away from it. So when we don't understand that, oh, this is an evolutionary instinct that kept us alive as a global civilization to this point, then we can make different choices.
Exactly. Although it's not entirely simply an intellectual thing. It's not just understanding.
Right.
That transforms. It's the feeling of gratitude. I mean, that old spiritual saying, what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
What you judge and condemn about yourselves, or judge and condemn, and you say your partner or your children or those close to you, tends to keep those patterns in place. What you can appreciate, what you can find gratitude for, what you can accept, what you can cherish and celebrate, you paradoxically, you make it easier for others and make it much easier for yourself to transform. So, you know, what you resist persists, and what you can appreciate can transform.
Of course. You know, I love the idea of, like, for me personally, I honor pain. Like, so I know that if I'm in pain, I'm talking about really here emotional pain, that's really telling me that somehow I'm out of integrity. And so instead of just, you know, thinking of different experiences, undesirable experiences of our emotions as instinctual and making different choices, I look at them and realize, oh, if I'm experiencing pain or if I'm experiencing guilt or regret, that it's actually telling me that I'm moving away from God, which I think is what they're designed for anyway. I see the universe, I see God as being self-correcting. So it's like, so yes, what you said about we move towards pleasure and move away from pain, but even if it's just a temporary fix of pleasure, like many of the addictive type behaviors that you mentioned, eventually that becomes pain, and it tells us, oh, we're going the wrong way. And it's kind of like a sign to turn around and go the other way.
Exactly. I mean, you put your finger exactly right on it. I mean, our negative emotions aren't negative. They may feel uncomfortable, they may feel painful, but they're signals, and they're signals from God. They're signals from reality.
Yes.
In fact, one of the things that a lot of people, both in traditional religions and sometimes in sort of New Thought, New Age circles, is, you know, we use the word God, some people do, And yet it's sort of nebulous what we're pointing to. And yet one of the things that we know empirically, you know, evidentially, there's just tons of evidence for this to be the case. This is not a belief-based statement, is that God concepts, all God concepts, and for that matter, goddess concepts, are personifications of something that's fundamentally real, some aspect of reality or the whole of reality. And what we find is that, I mean, the way I sometimes say it in a nutshell is that God is a personification of reality, not a person. And when we think of God as a person, we then run into all the sort of limitations of persons, and it becomes sort of absurd because you've got literally thousands of stories around the world that all make sense right. if you interpret them as personifications, mm-hmm. But none of them make sense if you interpret God as a person, because then you're left with the bizarre thought that God either has multiple personality disorder or God is schizophrenic or whatever. You know? So when we realize that God is a personification, then you can say that every time I use the word God, think of the word reality with a capital R. In fact, mm-hmm. one of my favorite quotes from Philip K. Dick, he says, reality is that which when you stop believing in it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And right. that's what an evolutionary perspective is pointing to when we use the word God. So, yes, it's exactly that, that our so-called negative emotions are signals, they're messages from God, they're messages from reality on how to come, as you said, into integrity, into right relationship with reality. And that's another word that's really important, is that when people realize that integrity doesn't mean just being honest, I mean, it includes that, but it means being in right, it means growing in right relationship with reality. And that's what all cultures have done. All cultures have had mythic stories that have helped people to come into right relationship with reality. And when they do that, they feel the kingdom of heaven, to use that kind of traditional language. But they feel joy, they feel peace, they feel excitement to be alive, they feel gratitude for the past, they feel trust when they look to the future, including a future without them. They feel inspired in the moment to be in action, no matter what the challenges of the day might provide. All cultures have provided maps of reality, maps of how to be in right relationship with reality. But they've also used mythic language. And now we have science giving us a far more accurate map of reality, but science has eschewed or avoided, understandably so, God language. And so we're in this incredibly awesome time now where we're finding that once we realize that God is a personification, not a person, we can say that God language is completely appropriate. And our sciences is the way that God, the way that reality is communicating to us today. So I say it like facts are God's native tongue. You know, that evidence is the main way that God is speaking to us today. And that reconciles the whole science and religion debate.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I love the analogy of God being a personification of reality. I often think of reality as simply a mirror of God.
Yeah, exactly. You can look at it the other, I mean, you could say that reality is God's secular name, or God is reality's mythic name. I mean, both are legitimate yes. ways of thinking about it.
Yeah, yes. And so, you know, you're listening to you remind me of something that happened a few months ago in relation to guilt. And I think that guilt is probably one of the most compelling experiences and emotions that directs us back towards the divine, back towards God.
Yeah.
And I thought I had gotten over this concept of guilt years and years ago, and a few months ago I was at a friend's house, and I just started thinking of my youngest son, who was about 12 at the time, and I just, you know, just couldn't stop thinking about him. And my girlfriend said to me, "Oh, you're feeling guilt?" And my first thought, no, I'm not feeling guilt, because I had thought I resolved all my, you know, guilt
right,
issues,
yes,
you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you know, and I looked at it and realized that, oh wow, I hadn't realized it, but yes, I was feeling guilt. And I took a deep breath, sat back, and I looked at what it really was. And what it was that I was feeling that I wasn't completely connecting to my son, who was, you know, challenging to connect with.
Yes.
And, at, you know, 12 years old, and he's always, you know, been his own person and the most beautiful person, and I just found myself, yes, feeling guilty that I wasn't really connecting with him.
Sure.
And once I realized that, instead of like allowing, you know, the guilt to just keep going on, I realized
right.
that what was really happening was God was self-correcting me. And I do mean that. God was self-correcting
yes.
me.
Yes.
No mistake with the self-correcting. God was self-correcting me. I was experiencing this guilt, which made me look at a situation that I might have easily avoided, because we're so busy in life. We get so much going on. But here's this great, great gift of guilt.
And I truly, truly took it as this gift of guilt, and I allowed it to work through me so that I can make different choices, and immediately made different choices. My relationship with my son changed, and it was gone.
Yeah. So exactly. That's it. You nailed it. That's it. And the thing is, we're not going to experience the kingdom of God. We're not going to experience the heavenly peace that passes all understanding or any other kind of metaphorical language that you want to talk about. We're not going to experience true bliss or joy if our relationships suck, or if there's something that we feel guilty about or something that we feel resentful about. So that's why one of the things that I try to do when I work with people and in my public programs and certainly in my book is to point people in the direction of coming into right relationship with reality, not just in an abstract sense, but, who are the elements of reality? Who are the people in your life that you're closest to, that you interact with most? Your obviously your partner, your spouse, your partner, your children or parents, your, you know, boss or, you know. And so if any of those relationships is less than a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the absolute couldn't possibly be better, then that shows that there's room to grow. And that any step that you take, you don't have to be perfect at it, any step that you take in the direction of moving those relationships toward a 10 brings such joy and energy and happiness. Again, it doesn't. You don't have to be perfect at it overnight. It's like it takes time. Especially because a lot of the wounds are deep and lasting, and you know they've got their baggage, and you've got your interpretations, and everybody's interpreting reality. So it's a complex situation. I don't mean to simplify it, but for example, this question, just this question, can be utterly transforming, and I guarantee it will be anybody who does it. And I actually learned this first from Jack Canfield. And the question is this: asking anybody who you're in a relationship with, in any capacity, whether it's your spouse or your child or your mother or your brother or whatever, you know, your boss, on a scale of 0 to 10, how would you rate the quality of our relationship? You give them the space to genuinely answer, and then say this: if it's less than a 10, what would it take to make it a 10? So you're asking for feedback in the most constructive possible way. You're asking them to give you a sense, to the degree that they can become conscious of it themselves, of what it would take. And now, in some cases, people think that, oh, gosh, you know, what the person says, I'm not capable of that. Okay, well, that's part of reality. But again, that kind of helpful feedback. And what I found is that when people are asked that kind of question, even if it's a work kind of situation rather than an intimate relationship or family relationship, they are honored to be asked by that kind of a question. It's like, you know,
absolutely right. Just amazing. Asking the question improves the relationship.
Exactly.
Right.
And because that's
I'm
the way
sure
evolution
that you'll
works.
Agree that the first relationship is with yourself.
Yes.
That unless we have a great, you know, number 10 relationship with ourselves, that there's no way that we can have those kind of relationships with other people. And I see a lot of people in my coaching practice where they come to me and they want to improve their relationships, and I do, you know, coaching for couples and as well as families, and it nothing happens beyond the self. So it's like that's where you work first, the relationship with the self, and then it goes back to everything that we've been talking about, and especially being in integrity with yourself and finding what's right for yourself. Because, you know, you can say, okay, well, this is all the things that I need to do to create, you know, an experience of heaven on earth, or truly, you know, the God's kingdom here on earth. But maybe that's not what's right for that person. And I know there's been a lot of traditions and religions throughout history say, okay, you need to do this, this, and this, and this. And maybe that will work, but there's a good possibility that won't work because it's such an individual experience. Life is an individual experience, and I think even God is an individual experience. And really, that's the point. That's the point, that no one can experience God for you. And you are here to really experience God in everything around you, and everyone around you, in your body, in your soul, in your sexuality, in your breath, in the foods you eat, in the air, in everything you see, hear, think, and feel, and to really be able to get into right relationship with yourself first in order for you to be an experiencer of God. And I believe that that's creating that number 10 relationship with yourself. And then from there, it's almost a piece of cake in most cases to create those profound relationships with everyone else. Because now suddenly you're not just in relationship with another human being. What's really happening is you're in relationship with God. Everywhere you look, you know, whether it's your child, whether it's your spouse, whether it's a parent, whether it's your dog, whether it's the mailman or someone that you just met at the supermarket, that everyone that you're in a relationship with, you realize that what's really happening is that you are in a profound relationship with God, and then everything changes.
Right.
You know, how do you want to treat God? And, you know, and recognizing yourself as an expression of that, too. How do you want to treat yourself? So it's like when I recognize myself as that expression, as that experience, I'm a little bit more conscious about the foods I put in my body and the words that come out of my mouth.
Exactly, exactly. When you start treating the people who are close to you, the people that you interact with on a regular basis, and for that matter, the landscapes that you interact with, you know, your water, your air, your soil, what you eat, and that sort of thing, but also the people that are close to you, when you start treating them with that kind of divine respect, it is utterly transforming. I mean, I have often said to men, when I speak to in men's groups, I say, you know, if your primary expression of divine worship is not your spouse or your partner, you don't get worship.
Right.
I mean, it really needs to be. And that's where, I mean, the Tantra traditions, of course, know this. And I'm not speaking about merely sexual. I mean, I'm speaking about, I mean, for example, any primary partnership, in my opinion, where you're not creating a safe space for the other person to be completely authentic with whatever's really so, whatever's really real for them, because that's where, again, reality is God.
Yes.
And so if you're not if you're not A, being responsible around what's real for you, in other words, expressing what's really so for you, that it's authenticity, but also allowing the safe space for others to be authentic. And for example, any man that is not consistently making sure that his wife or his partner is free of any resentment. Like if for example, Connie, my wife, if she has any resentment at all, even the littlest niggly little anything, I notice it. I can see it on her face, and we'll do this little heart to heart process. We've got some tools that we use that's simply a safe space for her to fully and authentically express what's on her mind. And, you know, I in chapters 11 and 12, in fact, any of your listeners, they can ignore all of my book if they want, but chapters 11 and 12 are just practical exercises on how to have thriving relationships in every way. And one of them, you know, one of the tools that we use is this heart-to-heart process, because it guarantees that someone is never carrying any resentment or bitterness or anything negative. And that keeps things juicy. That keeps things yummy. That keeps things erotic, that keeps things heartful, it keeps things tender. And those kinds of things, just little tools like that, are communication, making sure in family meetings, for families with kids, to have the opportunity for children to regularly, you know, at some frequency, once a month, once a week, whatever, where they can safely express whatever is really so for them, whatever regrets they have, whatever joys and praise they have, whatever guilt, just anything, where everybody gets a chance to express in a very safe way what's really so, what's really authentic for them. That works miracles in families.
Absolutely, because it allows that person to drop down into themselves, not pretend to be someone other than who they are, and by connecting with themselves, of course, they're connecting with the divine, and then they're able to connect with others around them. That could only be a good thing.
Exactly.
Could only be a good thing. And it's about that open heart space. So it's like what I hear you saying is that when we create open hearted spaces for other people, by first, of course, I'm sure you'll agree, creating it for ourselves, then suddenly people can be more authentic and those relationships can be more authentic and you're connecting from an open heart rather than from a closed heart, which can never be an experience of heaven on earth. The more open we are, the more we experience the divine. We experience heaven, and that can be open to our mate. It can be open to those people around us. It can be open to nature. It's the openness that puts us in touch with heaven in our experience in everyday life.
Exactly, and nurturing divine feeling states such as gratitude and trust. Gratitude when you look to the past and to the present, and mm-hmm. trust when you look to the present and to the future. I mean, those sorts of nurturing those feeling states truly does bring one closer to God. And again, there's simple practices, there's simple exercises, there's simple communication tools that can really assist us as individuals and as couples and as families to be in right relationship with reality, to be right with God.
Mm, beautiful. I love that. Nurturing feeling states. Feeling states. I think that what most people don't realize is that we really have a choice, that we are not victims to our feelings, and we're not even victims to circumstance. We have complete control and complete choice of where we focus our attention right. and the stories we make up about things, because really that's what we're talking about. How do you create, you know, a state of distrust? Well, by telling yourself stories that create feelings of distrust. How do you create a state of fear by telling yourself stories that create fear? How do you create a state of gratitude by telling yourself stories that create gratitude?
Yeah, well, what you're pointing to, Nanise, with regards to the stories is, I think, one of the most fundamental insights into the nature of humanity, human nature, that we have, which is that the primary determinant of the quality of your life is not, and I know you know this, but it is not things that happen to you.
Yes.
It's how you interpret what happens to
yes.
you. And so it's the stories that you tell about what happens to you and what
yes.
you tell about that person who just hurt you or that person who just cut you off or that, you know, is how we interpret reality profoundly affects the quality of our life. So getting really good at interpreting generously rather than interpreting in a stingy way, well,
right.
first of all, to recognize that there's always more than one way to interpret something so that we're not stuck with whatever the knee-jerk interpretation that our unconscious gives, but that we recognize, oh, okay, that's an interpretation, that's a story. How can I interpret this in a more generous way? How can I interpret this in a way that is more loving or compassionate or generous or, you know, trusting or whatever? And
yes.
and if there were one skill I wish I could impart to young people, like, you know, high school students and college students, it would be the skill, you know, kind of exercising the muscle, developing the skill of interpreting life generously. It's just a hugely
yes.
important tool.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, it's interesting because when somebody has something challenging happen and they have that pain, the pain can be a reminder that, oh, I'm making a fear-based interpretation of what's going on instead of a generous interpretation of what's going on. And there's also those everyday things that we completely take for granted. For example, I was at the supermarket a little while ago before the show, and I was going to put my push cart away, and this man who worked in the store, he started coming towards the push cart. And instead of just thinking, oh, good, you know, he's going to take this push cart so I don't have to, you know, take it all the rest of the way, instead I thought, oh, wow, this is a man that I get to connect with for even an instant. I get to share love and light and energy with. And the simple act of returning a push cart became this godly act
right.
of love and connection. And I know he felt it because I felt it. And,
right.
you know, there was no more words exchanged than, oh, how are you today? And thank you. And, oh, have a beautiful night. That was
yeah.
it. And we both yeah, felt it.
Yeah, and as women, of course, I mean, you know, I'm speaking, I'm a 6'1", you know, 50-year-old man, but as, you know, as a woman, especially as an attractive woman, you know, being loving, being kind, being generous, you know, sometimes you're going to get some men that are going to turn on to you. They're going to interpret that in a way that you are not intending. And so that, you know, having clear boundaries, but also being generous about that is a perfect balance to Lord, sort of exude love and yet also not, you know, not give wrong signals, that sort of thing.
So I love that you brought that up. and it's so interesting because I have heard women say things like that, similar to me. How do I know that man's not going to get the wrong signal? Well, you just need to be really clear and comfortable and confident in yourself.
Exactly.
And if somebody does, this is great. And if somebody does get the wrong signal, you simply say, oh, I'm so sorry that you got the wrong idea. I'm just really like who you are, and I just wanted to share, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm really in love with life, and sometimes that just bubbles over, and people interpret it the wrong way or whatever. But, yeah, exactly, not making them wrong, but at the same time being clear about yourself and about your boundaries, exactly.
just had a huge epiphany. It's been over the last couple of months, and I realized that I, in many situations, and it was actually in a very sacred place of meditation that Divine showed this to me, that there were places that I was withholding my love. So I'm so loving and so giving, but there were places that I was withholding my love. And it was these places, Michael, so you're very, very psychic here, and the places that being where I was afraid of giving the wrong signal, or what if a man, you know, takes it the wrong way and comes on to me, and God showed me that thinking was incorrect. And as soon as I got that, I just said, you know what, I'm not going to withhold any of it. I'm just going to be myself regardless. And if someone does get the wrong idea, I'll just very clearly clear it up. You know, I'll just clear it up. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is that when I do clear it up, it's completely fine. And I get just to keep being loving. And I don't have to withhold my love. And it just becomes this beautiful win-win. But it does come from this place of confidence and being really clear about what you want, and also your ability to share that understanding with other people when necessary. That's the key.
Exactly. And here's another place where having an evolutionary understanding of our brains and of our nature is useful. In fact, there are two books written by Lou Anne Brizendine. They're both New York Times bestsellers. One of them is called The Female Brain, and then just recently she wrote The Male Brain. And they're the best books on evolutionary brain science that I know of. They're just brilliant. And part of it is when we have an evolutionary understanding of our brains, it can, you know, we then can allow other people to be who they are and yet be very clear in our own sense, because we're not in the process of making either them wrong or us wrong. And
exactly.
And another place that where you touched on just a few minutes ago, actually earlier in the interview as well, or the conversation as well, which is that, you know, pain or guilt or uncomfortable feelings, that those things can be experienced as gifts in disguise.
Yes.
They're blessings.
And they are
especially
gifts.
Yeah, they are. And when you look evolutionarily, there are countless examples of how chaos, catastrophe, bad news, breakdowns have been the major thing that has catalyzed and furthered creativity and transformation. In fact, I would go so far as to say that the number one thing in evolutionary history, like in 4.5 billion years of Earth's history, the primary thing that has driven and catalyzed creative transformation has been chaos, breakdowns, and bad news.
Yes.
And so when you see that over and over again in life, that builds my faith. It builds my trust. It allows me to trust the chaos of my life, the chaos of whatever emotional state I may be feeling, the chaos of our times, our world, our culture, so that I can come from a place of generosity, a place of compassion, a place of commitment, rather than a place of judgment or stinginess, precisely because I recognize that, oh, I can trust that this chaos isn't a cosmic mistake, that creativity, something new can emerge because of this chaos, that it took this chaos. In other words, it wouldn't have emerged if we didn't have this chaos.
Right. And so people look around now, and there's a lot of chaos on this planet.
Yeah.
It looks like we're moving further away from heaven. But in fact, we're moving closer to heaven on earth, because when things are in order, change is so much more difficult to reach, because things are in order. But when things are chaotic, then it's much easier to reorder them, and reorder them in divine order, rather than lower vibration
order. Exactly. Reorder them.
Is wonderful.
Exactly. It gives us an opportunity to realign things such that they are truly aligned with reality. And that is building the kingdom of God here on earth.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Because we're doing that right now. And each and every one of us has a responsibility in doing so.
Yeah, exactly. And a joy to be able to play a part.
Yes. Yes. And so I know there's a lot of people out there probably thinking, well, how do I, you know, little old me, I live in a little town in Wisconsin or whatever, how do I do it? And I want to hear your response to them. My response is, you start with your life. You start with discovering who you are, putting your life in integrity with your values, by practicing gratitude over fear, by healing the past, by forgiveness, and by mending relationships that have been torn or broken, and most important, by loving yourself, by forgiving yourself, by giving yourself a little space and a little time to develop and evolve and getting more and more in alignment with the divine and who you really are.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
By doing so, you fulfill your piece of the puzzle.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with all that. And I would say in terms of, you know, if someone had asked that question to me, I'd say, the bottom line is, ask yourself consistently, how can I come into a closer alignment with the way things really are within me and around me? So in other words, how do I come into greater integrity? How do I come into greater alignment with reality? And that's where chapters 11 and 12 in my book, Thank God for Evolution, can be really useful. I mean, it's just those practices, those exercises are designed to help people be in right relationship with reality at all levels. But also, in September, I'm going to be launching a course, a six-month course, called Coming into Right Relationship with Reality. It's actually, the title is Evolutionize Your Life, Coming Home to Reality. And it's a program, it's a six-month program to help people apply these tools, to have the support structure, and that sort of thing. And so if anybody listening to this may be interested, if you just go to my Thank God for Evolution site and just put your email address there, then when that course is available, I'll notify folks and, you know, let them know. But even without that course, chapters 11 and 12 of my book would be a good place to start.
And can you share where listeners can get your book? And
yeah.
Also, you've got DVDs and a whole bunch of other stuff, so please.
Sure. Well, Thank God for Evolution.
Know.
our two main websites are thankgodforevolution.com and thegreatstory.org. And The Great Story is just a wealth of all kinds of educational tools and things for helping people have a better understanding of the nature of reality. And that's where also our DVDs you can get there and our podcasts and just all kinds of stuff. So either thankgodforevolution.com or thegreatstory.org. And, you know, you can get my book at any bookstore. One of the nice things about, you know, my book having been endorsed by six Nobel Prize-winning scientists, as well as by theologians and ministers and priests and rabbis across the spectrum, is that it's in virtually every bookstore, and you can get it through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and that sort of thing as well.
Awesome. Michael, this has been so exciting. I have loved sharing this conversation with you in this time, and I'm quite certain that we have helped a lot of people experience the divine in their life at even greater levels. So once again, I am so grateful for your time and energy and your love and your wisdom. You're amazing.
Thank you, Denise. I feel the same about you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, sweetheart. You have a great night, and I'm sure you'll be on the show again.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Yes, you have a part to play in bringing heaven here to earth. It's all around us, just waiting for us to wake up and remember who we are, waiting for us to get back in alignment with the integrity of the divine, waiting for us to take a deep breath in and remember that we truly do have the power to be that change we want to see in the world. At any given moment, you are either moving away from God or moving towards God. And it's very easy to figure out what's going on for you at any given moment. Because when you're moving away from God, you're experiencing fear, distrust, guilt, separation. When you're moving towards God, you're experiencing love and kindness and harmony. You are connecting. Our feelings will tell us which direction we're going in. And when we listen to our feelings and we correct our path and we realign ourselves in the direction of moving towards God and moving towards the divine, what we do is wake up and realize that we truly are living in God's kingdom, that God's kingdom is within us, and as a result of that, God's kingdom is outside of us, that we have the ability to live in heaven today, that nothing has to happen, that the world doesn't have to change out there. The only thing that has to change is us. The only thing that has to change for you to experience heaven on earth is you. And when you change, your world changes. When I change, my world changes. And when enough of us change, the collective consciousness of the world at large will change too. And I'll tell you, it's inevitable. We are fast moving in that direction, and nothing is going to stop us. And so instead of paying attention to all those distractions on the news, instead of paying attention to all those fear-based stories of separation, change your mind and focus on what you really want. Focus on love. Focus on connection. Focus on love. And remember that your experience of love is as great or as scarce as the stories that you tell about yourself, those in your life, and everything around you. And if you want to experience more love, if you want to experience more God, all you have to do is make that choice. Be conscious and start telling yourself stories that support what you really want. Be generous with your interpretation, as Michael Dowd so brilliantly shared with you tonight. Because the more generous you are with your interpretation, the more generous the universe is with you. Because nothing can happen without your choice. It's all around you. It's yours for the taking. Heaven is here on earth. And isn't it beautiful that we, you and I, get to bring it in and transform this world and truly live in this Eden that is our heaven and always has been. And so tonight, I would love for you to include yourself in our prayer circle or anyone that you may know who is suffering, living in fear, experiencing pain or disease, and you would like to pray for. And so just imagine that there's a beautiful golden circle with a beautiful beam of light coming down into the middle of that circle. And whoever it is that you would like to pray for, whoever it is that you are now praying for, please imagine them in that circle and in that beam of golden light. And this beam of golden light is big enough to encapsulate everyone, anyone. So send yourself in, a friend, a relative, many friends, many relatives. And watch what happens. Watch them heal before your eyes. And tonight I would like to send into that golden circle of healing energy and light Adam and Rebecca, Tristan, Mark, Cammy, Justin, and Lois. And take a deep breath. And it is done, it is done, it is done. Please visit me on my website at nanice.com. That's N-A-N-I-C-E.com. N-A-N-I-C-E.com for tons of free articles on spirituality and evolution and enlightenment and love and faith and everything else you can imagine. Plus, all my shows are archived from Goddardy and also from Chai Wetlandis on LA Talk Radio. And there's a free book download that will enlighten you and just send tingles through your whole body. There's also two free song downloads and tons of other great information. And while you're there, don't forget to take the pledge. Click on the pledge. It's on the right-hand column of the homepage. It will change your life and give you a new set of ways to how to live and how to love and how to be that change that you truly want to see in your life and in the world. And until next week, remember, you are loved and I love you. And you are an amazing, magnificent, beautiful being and light of God. And dream big, because God is listening, and so am I. Till next week, you have been listening to Goddardy. I'm Nanice. Bye for now.